Hello there, this is Dr. Alan Hedberg, and this is the Psychology Report. Today I would like to address an issue that not only is true in America, but you know it's true all around the world. I've not traveled a lot of different countries, but I've traveled quite a few. And I've interacted with families, and I've interacted with teenagers, and with young adults, and with families in various countries and in various circumstances. You know, there's a commonality. Yeah, one day I came back from Sweden and I said, you know, the children in Sweden cry in the same way that the children in America cry. But you know, today I want to talk about teenagers, because in the same thing, teenagers in Sweden, teenagers in Turkey, teenagers in other countries of the world are just like the teenagers of America. There's a thing that we sometimes refer to as teenagerism. This is like a chronic illness or a chronic disease. That's not going to go away. There's no cure for it. All you can do is manage it. But there's a hope. Because every teenager becomes an adult. And every teenager, at some point, gets his mind straightened around and begins to think differently and to think uprightly and positively. You know, just take a look at the brain. You know, our brain develops from birth until 25. And it's during the teenage years that the excess parts of the brain, the excess brain cells, are kind of pruned away and torn away and eliminated, because they're more than a teenager needs and more than is needed during the adult years and more than is used. So there's a lot of brain activity that takes place during the teenage years of 14 to about 18 or so, when the brain culls itself and simplifies and forms its patterns of thought and forms its patterns of decision making and judgment. So there's hope, but it's not until age 25, I have to tell you, because it's age 25 that the brain stabilizes. And then is stable until about 45 or so. There's a little bit of an uptick at that point in time where the brain becomes a little bit sharper, a little bit more functional, efficient. In other words, we get smarter. And then at about 50 to 60, you start to see the slow decline of the brain. And today we're going to focus on just that first section, age birth to 25. And this chronic illness known as teenagerism. You know, there are eight characteristics that I've identified that just bug parents. Now, over the years as a psychologist, seen a lot of families, a lot of teenagers. I've seen thousands of teenagers and families over my 45 years of clinical practice. And I tell you, there's a common pattern. You see it over and over again. It's the same thing that bugs me as a therapist, that I'm sure bugs every parent. These are the things that bring sometimes families into therapy. These are the things that sometimes drive parents apart and separate, because you have a parent that is more sympathetic than another parent. These are the things that divide children or teenagers from their parents. And sometimes teenagers from their siblings. What are some of these points? There's eight of them that I've identified. These are just bug parents to death. You know, teenagers are what I call delayed responders. You know, within the medical community and the emergency community of police and firemen and so on, we have what we call the first responders. Well, teenagers are sometimes the last responders, but certainly they are delayed responders. You ask a teenager to do something, and what do you get? Okay, I'll get it, and then doesn't respond and doesn't take care of it until you ask again and again and again. Or they'll say, just a minute, I'll take care of it later. That's delayed response, and it just bugs parents, because what happens is the teenager not only forgets, but probably has no intention of doing it in the first place. So we call that delayed responding. And parents have to deal with that. They have to make sure the child is listening, make sure the child is paying attention, make sure that the child is aware of what is being asked and wanted. All these kind of things have to be focused on, because otherwise what you're going to get is just a blank stare and inaction. So Delayed responding is very much part of teenagerism. Secondly, I identify the idea of fads reign. Fads reign. Hair color, color of shoes, clothing style, clothing makeup style, this whole thing of tattooism. I mean, there are fads that prevail. There are fads that have prevailed throughout the years. When my children, who are now in their 40s, were teenagers, they had their fads that they had to deal with. Sometimes they rejected the fads. Sometimes they went with the fads. Sometimes we as parents with our kids fought over the fads. But you know, fads prevail in the life of a teenager. And you have to deal with it. Sometimes you have to put your foot down and say, absolutely not. That's not our value system. That's not what takes place in our family, our home. It's not how we live. And that's not how you're going to live. Sometimes you just have to put your foot down and be very firm. There are other times, yes, you can go along with a fad. Or you can set a date on it. Yes, you can do it for 6 months, but that's all. Or you can do it for 3 months, and that's it. You know, in other words, give them a taste of it. But then at that point, it ends. It stops. It terminates. Or you may have to take the position, you can do it, but you can't do it quite like that. Here's a modification, or here's a compromise that I think we can live with. I remember years ago, it used to be hair length in boys. And there were a lot of arguments and a lot of compromises that were made between fathers and sons as to the hair length. So fads prevail and always have prevailed. Thirdly, cash value is not something that is understood or appreciated. Teenagers are cash value dense. What I mean by that is they don't understand the value of a dollar. They don't understand what it took to make a dollar so that they could have a dollar to spend as they want in a way that you probably don't even appreciate or wouldn't want them to spend. But you know, money is the thing that negotiates life. And kids have to have money. But they don't understand the value of it, the importance of it, and what it means to you as a family, and what other things you might be saving for so that they can have a better life, or that they can have something that they would appreciate later on in life as compared to right now. It's the old story. Would you rather have a quarter now, or would you rather have a dollar later? Of course we'd rather have a dollar, but sometimes we don't want to have it later. Cash value dense kids are. You know, that's the purpose of having an allowance. That's the purpose of giving children or teenagers, and certainly when they come into junior high years, a certain amount of money per week or per month, which they spend. And they have a clear understanding of what that is to be spent for. And what you're going to pick up in addition to that, and what you're not going to pick up in addition to that as parents. That way kids can spend their money, and when the end of the week comes and they don't have any, they have to wait until the next payday. Or the end of the month comes and they don't have any money and they have to wait until the next payday, just like we have to. The more that you can put a teenager during the junior high years and high school years on some kind of a pay schedule, the better their management of money is going to be later on in life. So don't just hand out a dollar here and a dollar there and $5 now and $10 later and so on and then get mad about it and fight about it. Figure out how much you're going to give a kid per week or per month. Give it to them on a per week or per month and then no more. And if they want to spend beyond that, they can save. If they want to spend beyond that, they can wait until the next paycheck, just like you have to do it. Make it life. Cash value dense kids are. You know, also, teenagers go silent. They have a silent life. They like to isolate in the room. They like to keep things to themselves. They sometimes share with their friends but don't share with their parents. Sometimes they write out some of their thoughts, their feelings in a journal. And that's good, by the way. Encourage that. But kids tend to be silent. And you have to draw them out. But you know what? You can't pressure them. You can't demand of them that they talk or that they tell you something, because then they're going to go more silent. You have to just listen. You have to be creatively open to listen. You have to be creatively asking questions. You have to be creatively just being aware of what's going on in the child's life so you can discuss it as compared to asking questions. Kids prefer to be silent. But you want to break that silence because you want them to be a participant of your family, a participant of the community. And you have to help children understand the importance of communicating, the importance of sharing, the importance of having a dialogue and a give and take with the family and with you and with others in the same way that they do with their friends. Kids are silent at home, but they're not silent with their friends. The other thing about teenagerism is that they have this kind of in-their-room behavior. They come home from school in the afternoon, and they beeline it for their room, and they shut the door, and never to be seen, unless you're going to serve a meal for dinner. You know, kids like to hide in their room, and that's not a good thing, because that isolates. And when you let a kid isolate, they become less communicative. They don't learn communication skills. They don't learn social skills, and they're deprived of social interactional skills for the rest of their life. It's true that sometimes kids need to be by themselves. They need that time just to interact with their own little mind and with their own experiences of the day. They need to somehow just kind of process what happened in the course of their day. That's true. They may need an hour, maybe 2 hours, who knows? But it can't be all day and all night. Long periods of time in the room alone is not good. It adds to depression. It creates depression and isolationism and the lack of social skills and communication skills. So what we did, sure, a kid can be in his room alone, but that door cannot be totally closed. The door needs to be cracked a little bit because then there you can get some interaction, at least by sound. But it's a way of saying, you're still part of our family. You can't isolate off from our family. Also about teenagerism, they have this problem in the morning. We all know what it is. It's called getting up. They have this problem of getting up. They rather stay in bed. Of course, it's a way to withdraw. It's a way to deny. It's a way to not face the realities of life and to avoid the realities of school and a test that's coming along or an assignment that should have been done but was not done. It's a way of kind of getting away from responsibility. Now, it's true, teenagers do need their sleep. Teenagers need, 8 to 10 hours of sleep pretty regularly. If they miss that sleep, which many of them do because they're busy and they're active and all the rest, they need to catch up on that sleep, and that's what weekends are for. Every once in a while, a kid may have to stay home from school for a whole day and just sleep all day. That's better than allowing a child to just sleep and sleep until the very last moment, and then everybody's late for school because everybody's waiting for him to get up out of bed so that everyone can get in the car and go off to school and drop sister off at one school and drop brother off another school and so on. So getting out of bed is a tough one, and you need to negotiate that. You need to negotiate a wake-up call, a warning call, and then the last call. And I tell you, it needs to be done in a timely way. And when your child meets that, there needs to be a lot of reinforcement, a lot of praise, a lot of approval. Because that's tough for teenagers to get up when they really don't want to get up, you see? So, in bed behavior is not good. Don't give them an excuse at school. Don't write a note and say they were sick or something, they didn't feel well in the morning, and then let them go to school an hour later or let them go to school at noon. No, write a note and say the teenager did not get up. He was irresponsible. And let the school deal with it. That's a problem between the kid and the school because the contract is that the kid is to be at school at a certain hour of the day. And that teenager needs to be at that school and be responsible. Okay, that's another point. You know, when you look at teenagers, they don't care for others, do they? They don't think of others. They aren't considerate of others, are they? They think of themselves. They're very self-centered. They're very inward. And they want what's best for them. You know, if there was an adult, we would call it narcissistic. That's what narcissism is. It's kind of like an adult adolescent who wants everything for himself, his way and his time and his manner and in his pleading. That's what a narcissist is. But kids are just kids. Teenagers are teenagers, but they engage in that same kind of behavior. They just want it their way, in their timing, And if we allow them to live that way, if we give a teenager everything he wanted and give a teenager when they want something and what they want, then we're fostering, we're teaching, we're encouraging, we're helping them learn to be a narcissist when they grow up and become older. Do you want your kid to be a narcissist? Absolutely not. So, a kid has to be responsible, but a kid also has to have a sense of empathy, a care for others, a concern for others, an appreciation for others, a sense of awareness of the life of others and the problems that other people go through and the needs that other people have, and to respond to those and to be thoughtful and to be considerate. It could be the brother, it could be the sister, it could be the mother, the father, it could be the aunt and uncle, the grandma, the grandpa, the neighbor, the friends, the people in the church, the people down the street, you know, whatever it might be. But there needs to be an awareness of other people. And then lastly, for teenagerism, friends prevail. You know, there's a passing of the wand. In the early years, the kid is very dependent upon the parent. Very organized by the parent's life and the directions that parents give kids. But as they get a little older and they get into teenage years, they get to be friend-oriented. Friends make the big difference. Friends make the big impact. Friends make the big influence on their life. And that's why it's important for you as a parent to know who their friends are. It's better to have the friends over to your house than your kid go to somebody else's house, because then you know who the friends are. Gives you a chance to size them up and to determine whether those are good friends for your kids. There are times that it's important to draw the line and say, that person is no longer a friend. That person is no longer wanted and able to enter this home. That person is no longer to be in your life. You are not to have lunch with that person anymore. And then monitor that. There are times you need to cut a friendship from a child's life. But you have to help the child understand the reason for that. You have to understand, help the child appreciate that there was a basis for that and there's a rationale for that, and that things can be better in a different way with different friends. There are times when you have to kind of clean the slate and go cold turkey and then build new friendships. And you are, as a parent, responsible to help the kid build those friendships, to maintain good ones and to call off the bad ones. That's your job as a parent. Don't let your kids go on and on with a friendship that is destroying your child, destroying your family life, destroying your home, influencing your kid in the wrong direction. It isn't always drugs either. It's a lot of other kind of things. But we need to be aware of our friends. You need to take action, and you need to be on top of that. It's true. Friends prevail, and you have to understand that. But you have to make sure that your child is with friends that you want to allow to have an influence on your child's life. Well, good luck. If you're a teenager parent of a teenager, you got a tough job. These are just some of the things that go with teenagerism. But you know, there's hope. They grow out of it. They become adults. They become responsible. They get married. They clean the room. They show up on time. You know, there becomes a sense of otherness in the life of a teenager when they get married and when they get a young adult, get onto school, onto college. So there's hope. There's other people that will have influence on your child. You're not the only one and not the last one. But do your job. Don't neglect. You see, there's a very important research study that was done. If parents work 40 hours a week, their children do not generally have problems. That is, both the mother and the father, a total of 40 hours. But if mother and father work a total of 60 hours a week, their kids begin to shake. Those kids begin to crack a little bit and have problems. But if both parents work a total of 80 hours or more, that's doorstep to doorstep, those kids are the ones that have the trouble. Those kids are the ones that have the problem. So parents have to take a sense of responsibility and say, maybe we need to work less hours. Maybe we need to be gone less hours. Maybe we need to to simplify our life. Maybe we need to do that. Well, this has been the Psychology Report, and this is Dr. Alan Hedberg. You know, I wrote a book along this same line called Doctor, Teach Me to Parent. It was a book for parents raising young kids. But I have a big section in there about parents raising teenagers and how you can raise a teenager to be more communicative and to be more involved and to be more oriented towards their future and towards developing citizenship skills and developing social skills and developing work-oriented skills and career-oriented skills, life skills. Pick it up, will you? Doctor, Teach Me to Parent. You can get it from my website, booksbyhedberg.com. Booksbyhedberg.com. So I recommend it to you and hope that it will help you. Good to talk to you. This has been the Psychology Report. Bye for now.